Support for Politics and Public Policy reporting on SDPB is made possible by SDN Communications, your business broadband provider. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
And welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's time for our Dakota Political Junkies. And Dana Ferguson is with the Argus Leader. She's a watchdog government reporter. She's joining us in the studio, in the SDPB Sioux Falls studio. Dana, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
Also on the phone with us, Roger Whittle. He's managing editor for the Watertown Public Opinion. Roger, welcome.
Thanks. I wish I could be there with you two.
Absolutely. We'll put it on the calendar. You have to get us all in one spot. Let's start out talking a little bit about some of the big news of the day, or not so big news, depending on which side of the aisle you're on. But the Democrats have, we've had our state conventions, and now we have to have one more state convention. And Dana Ferguson, give us an overview of what exactly happened to the state Democratic Party.
Sure. So as listeners will recall, back in June, the Democrats had their convention here in Sioux Falls. They slated all their candidates, and then we found out earlier this week, and then some of the news broke yesterday and today about they're going to have to do it again in Sioux Falls, and they'll confirm their candidates next month. This comes after Republican Party Chair Dan Lederman sent a letter to the Secretary of State saying, hey, these didn't come in on time. That violates state law. They don't have the signatures they needed to have from convention officers. So it didn't happen the way it was meant to. It needs to happen again.
So it's essentially a paperwork problem. Nothing about the process at the convention is being challenged. Nothing about the candidates themselves. It's the fact that they didn't meet the deadline to send in information to the Secretary of State. Is that how I understand it?
Right. The contention is that it didn't make it in time, and it wasn't done the right way.
All right. Roger, your thoughts on really how, you know, this is playing out and how the parties are sort of using it, you know, to get their message out a little more.
Well, from what I hear, the Democratic, the official stance from them is this is no big deal. We're just going to, you know, quickly do it again and get it filed, and it's they're really playing it down. It's just interesting that this is the first election in a few years where there's the Democrats actually have some viable statewide candidates. So it's interesting that this is the year they chose to miss a deadline to get it filed. But, you know, I don't think this is that big of a deal for either side.
Republicans, Dana, are making a slightly bigger deal out of it.
They are, yes. Well,
they're trying to.
They're pointing to this as an indicator that the Democrats aren't able to organize. They aren't able to run things effectively. And they're trying to make a big deal of this and indicate you might not want those people running your state if they can't get their candidates in on time, if they can't make this work. Yeah. So obviously something that's tracking pretty well with their base. From what I've seen on social media, the Democrats' base is also, they're pretty understanding about the argument that this was a mail failure. We've heard from Democrats they're going to drive it in this time. They're not going to trust the Postal Service. So it'll be interesting to see if this continues to gain traction or if this just kind of goes away.
Sure. So Democrats have another opportunity and perhaps challenge with how do they handle the optics, I hate that word, but let's go ahead and use it, for the next convention and what exactly they, you know, as how they, you know, do you just let it go under the radar and just do what needs to be done, or do you turn it into a social media moment where you say, here we are, here we are, Republican Party, you know, we're organized and we have this taken care of, thanks very much.
Right, so it'll be interesting to see what route they sort of take there, if it becomes a good point for candidates to get back together and another opportunity to be in the media cycle, or if they try to let this one go under the radar, they don't want to make a big deal of not getting it right the first time. And I would anticipate that either way, Republicans are going to have a say about the fact that they didn't get it right the first time.
Sure. let's talk about something else that sort of, you know, plays out in the news cycle where we watch the statements and how people respond to them. And that's President Trump's nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to replace Justice Anthony Kennedy to the United States Supreme Court. And Roger, let's start with you, because this is the point where then we watch the South Dakota congressional delegates. The Democratic Party has something to say about the nomination. Everybody comes out with their statement, as it were. What can we tell from these statements about the nomination itself and, you know, the approval process, confirmation process, I should say?
Well, I think this is very similar to every Supreme Court nomination we've seen. Mm-hmm. The Republicans are going to be for this because it's a Republican president's pick. The Democrats will be against it. The thing is now, though, with such a narrow division between the two parties in the Senate, it's going to be a very close. The Democrats only have to get two or three Republicans to come over to their side, and they could conceivably block the nomination. But you know, the process here is that there's nothing strange about it or different. Both Thune and Rounds, you know, say they'll look, check him over, and, you know, thoroughly vet him before they vote to approve him, and the Democrats will be crying foul the whole way.
Right. And Dana, is there a significance to this cry from Democrats to block the nomination when they complained about the blocking of Merrick Garland's nomination, but now they're saying, you know, this person is going to possibly be, you know, part of, you know, the dialogue with the Mueller investigation and such? Just politics as usual? We just sort of understand that and move on? Or is there something here that's interesting?
I mean, it's also a midterm election year.
Right.
South Dakota might not matter in the grand scheme of that, as far as we're not going to have a whole lot of impact on the Senate, obviously, but they're wanting Democrats to make a big statement about this, to get out there and let Senators Rounds and Thune know how they feel about this. I don't know to what degree that's going to matter. It sounds like Senators Thune and Rounds have very high opinion of Judge Kavanaugh. They've already come out and said Democrats are going to oppose this person no matter who it is. Mm-hmm. But they've really supported his track record, and he has a very extensive sort of paper trail as far as work that he's done, decisions that he has been involved in. And I just don't know to what degree Democrats going out and raising a stink about this is going to do much.
Sure. Let's get into some policy. Now, beyond just the talking points and the press releases that people send out on either side, and we're still seeing, we're seeing more from the impact of the Affordable Care Act and Republicans' efforts in Washington to repeal and replace or change that. Dana, you wrote in ArgusLeader.com an article about South Dakota's health insurance rates and how they might be impacted because of a freeze on payments to insurers, and people can read that at ArgusLeader.com. But give us an overview of what's going on here.
Sure. So over the weekend, the Trump administration said that due to a court decision out of New Mexico, they are going to suspend these so-called risk adjustment payments. Those are used to sort of help insurance companies balance out their risk, make it a little more stable. Those came into play after the Affordable Care Act went into effect. And what insurers in South Dakota are saying is that for another year, they're going to have some uncertainty, and insurance companies certainly don't like uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And for customers, that means your rates might be going up. And to what degree, we don't quite know yet. They're in the process of setting those for 2019, but that uncertainty probably doesn't help.
Right. Roger Whittle, we're being told not to panic, though, by the by the big health insurance players in the state. What are your thoughts on this? Any insight into sort of how we watch healthcare premiums?
I have very little insight into this, except to say that, you know, everybody admits our healthcare system is broken somehow.
Right.
And in order to get it fixed, Democrats and Republicans have to find some kind of common ground and work together. And I don't see that happening anytime soon. So my confidence in the future of our healthcare system is not high. So at this point, I think all we can do is sit back and watch what happens and pay the price.
Right. And try to figure out our own individual plans as they change
exactly.
Moment by moment. Decide when you can go to the doctor and when you can't. Roger, I'm going to out Dana here because she's sitting here with me in that. And we always have her on the phone. She has no notes in front of her. I like take copious notes. She's just talking. You can say, Dana, talk about healthcare, and she'll just go, I'm so impressed.
Thanks.
All right, let's throw something else at her that's really... XL Energy, let's switch to that, because now we look again at a policy, and we'll start with you, Roger, on this, a policy from the Republicans when we look at tax reform and tax cuts that came out of Washington. Congresswoman Kristi Noem was a big part of the finalization of that tax bill. And somehow impacting XL Energy bills in the state, and people are going to get some money back.
Right. The average XL customer will see a nice little check of, I think I read it was $56, the average one, more if you use more electricity, less if you use less. But the more important thing is, I think this will stabilize rates, so they're going to be sure that they're not going to have any rate increases in the near future, and that's really good news for all the XL customers, and now they're expecting other electrical co-ops and companies in the state to follow suit.
Right. So as we talk about, tax reform and tariffs and healthcare, all this stuff is sort of, playing out, and we have these conversations week by week, Dana, about the politics of things, and we focus on that, but there's real impact to people's pocketbooks, people's lives, what's covered, what's not, at the doctor's office. We're sort of seeing policy in action.
Indeed. And I think that, I don't know, for me, that's part of why I think our job is important as political reporters, letting people know how these things are going to impact them day to day before they happen and now that they have happened, so that as a reader, as a listener, you're going to get some money back. And whether or not you liked the tax reform proposal, you might still be getting a refund. So.
Roger, let's talk a little bit about what's happening in your neck of the woods with a new wind project. Give us an overview of that, please.
Right. It's the Dakota Range wind farm. It will be straddling Coddington and Grant counties, I believe. Talking 72 turbines. It just got approved by the PUC this week, and we're just now waiting for construction to start. It's the first wind farm in the county. It's been a divisive issue, of course, the same kind of problems that happen everywhere they want a wind farm. The people who are going to have the towers on their land are all for it because they're going to be getting a nice check every year or whenever, and the people who live close to them don't want to look out their windows and see wind towers all the time. So
right.
It's been contentious, but it's they've passed all the legal hurdles they need to pass, and it looks like it's going to be a reality.
Right. Dana, before we let you go, it occurs to me that you covered, and we haven't talked about the Gear Up trial, and we shouldn't really call it the Gear Up trial, the Stephanie Huber's trial, and Attorney General Marty Jackley, and that did not have the resolution that he sort of wanted, but yet he had this month in June where the South Dakota versus Wayfair decision at the Supreme Court went the way he wanted, sort of highs and lows for Attorney General Jackley. You talked a little bit in the Argus Leader about what comes next for him. What are some of the thoughts about his future?
Right. So as you mentioned, it was a bit of a tumultuous month for Marty Jackley back in June. Obviously, a primary loss that he wasn't very excited about, and then a win in the Wayfair decision, sort of not the resolution he'd maybe argued for in the Huber's decision. But I sat down with him and Pierre in his office about mid-month, the day the Wayfair decision came down, and it was just really interesting to see sort of a looser-looking right. Marty Jackley, just ecstatic about the Wayfair decision. And he talked a little bit about how politics probably aren't going to be in the next phase of his life. He's hoping to take his wife out on some more dates, take his kids and watch more of their sporting events. And it sounded to me like his top option, even though he has quite a few given his educational background, would be to work in law in some way. And he said if there are candidates he thinks are strong candidates, he would definitely work with them and make sure they get elected.
Sure. Roger, your thoughts about what's next for Attorney General Jack Lee?
I just know what I read from what Dana wrote. So, right. But I do know that he's a smart guy, he's a good guy, and I'm sure he's going to be fine.
Yeah. And as we look at the race for governor now, as it stands, it's been a little, and the race for U.S. House really after the primaries, it's been a little bit quiet. Roger, are you noticing any trends? Is it time to sort of lay low before unveiling the next charge from either campaign?
Yeah, I always think that it's the 4th of July when candidates begin their run for the general election. I know they were all up here for our parades in Watertown and Cranesburg. So, been quiet so far, but expect it to be ratcheting up. I know there's a lot of money in all these candidates' bank accounts, and they're going to start spending it on advertising pretty soon. It's going to be fun.
Sure. Dana, you looking forward to it? It's going to be interesting watching going forward.
It's going to be all the parades, all the county fairs. We got a little bit of a taste of the status quo versus know you're more status quo this past week.
Right.
So I think it's going to be interesting in the governor's race to see who can effectively make the claim that the other candidate is more of a status quo candidate.
Sure. And interestingly enough, we've been, inviting candidates to SDPB to talk about, their campaigns for the State House and stuff. And a lot of issues that have, there hasn't been a lot of status quo in that. A lot of people have a good idea why they're running, and the issues that they're thinking about have been pretty impressed with many of those candidates. So lots to watch for, and you can find those at listen.sdpb.org as we put them all online after the programs. As you can find this conversation and all our Dakota Political Junkies conversations, you can find Dana Ferguson at argusleader.com and the Watertown Public Opinion, right? Roger, is that the website?
That's it.
Yes, you got to put the "the" in there. Roger,
yeah,
Whittle, thank you.
Don't forget the.
Thank you so much for being with us today. We appreciate your time, Roger.
My pleasure.
Dana, thanks for stopping by. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.